Futures Radio Show, sponsored by CME Group, the world's leading and most diverse futures and options exchange. CME Group's markets help individuals and businesses around the world effectively manage risk. For access to free educational tools and resources for the active individual trader, please visit activetrader.cmegroup.com.
Every day, traders and investors dive in to tackle the ever-changing markets to find opportunity. Futures Radio Show is your number one source for answers to the questions that all market participants want to ask. Veteran futures trader Anthony Crudele sits down with the most influential leaders and top traders in the industry. Now, here's your host, Anthony Crudele.
Hey everybody, thanks for tuning in for this episode with Chase Taylor. Remember, new shows are posted on Mondays and Thursdays. You could subscribe to the show on iTunes and YouTube. If you're enjoying the show, please leave a review on iTunes. Before I play today's interview for you, I want to give a shout out to the great sponsors of Futures Radio Show. CME Group, Trading Technologies, RJO Futures, and Top Step Trader. To learn more about these sponsors and the important things they are doing for futures traders, be sure to click on their logos on our website. Today I spoke with the founder and macro strategist at Pinecone Macro Research, Chase Taylor. Chase and I talked about the struggles he went through learning how to become a macro trader and how long it took for him to turn profitable. He shares with us how his trade set up, his process for execution, favorite technical analysis tools, and how he uses technicals to prove fundamentals, and the fundamentals to prove the technicals. Last but not least, Chase shares with us two trade examples, a long dollar trade, a short Dow trade, and how he has an edge in his trading. So without further ado, let me take you right to the interview with Chase. How'd you get involved in trading?
Yeah, so not the way most people do. I have no background on Wall Street, didn't go to business school. I just got really interested actually first in economics and then in markets and then in trading, kind of in that order. Been trading since about 08. Naturally, 08 got me really interested in what was going on in the world and of investing. So been trading since then, was horrible at it for years, of course, kind of slowly figured out my own style and what I was doing and what worked for me and what didn't. And you know, in the last few years, I've been more of a macro trader and I've kind of finally figured it out, hopefully.
Talk to us specifically about what got you interested in 08. Obviously, I know what happened in 08. It was a crazy busy year for me as a trader, but I'm curious from somebody who was newer to markets at that point in time, what attracted you to actually want to get involved and start actively trading?
Yes. So I've always been the kind of person that likes to figure out the why things do what they do and the way things work. And whenever the market collapsed and the economy, you know, had so many problems and I saw people in my own life and around me, you know, struggling because of what was going on, I just got really interested to try and figure out, you know, what exactly is going on here? Like how could this happen? What caused this? How did no one know that it was going to come? And just started really studying economics early on and markets. So for me, it was just kind of, I needed to solve that puzzle to understand, you know, how that all could have happened. And because of that, I kind of started off very, very hardcore into Austrian economics because those guys had kind of gotten it right, kind of saw that coming. So that was sort of how I got started. And, you know, the first stocks I bought because the number next to them was small, which, you know, now I know, of course, that didn't make any sense, but I bought Ford, you know, for a couple bucks and thought I was a genius, and for no other reason than they started going up in 09, it worked. But yeah, I just needed to know how that could happen and why.
Aside from the Austrian economics guys, as you mentioned, getting it right in 2008, what were the other influences for you to decide becoming a macro trader instead of maybe a day trader or a swing trader?
Yeah, so, you know, early on, I studied economics a lot. Then I started kind of trying to be an investor. But I think I just kind of operate too quickly for that. I couldn't just buy a stock and sit on it for 10 years. That was too boring for me. And I started to try and, you know, do some of the micro stuff. And that just was not interesting to me. And whenever I first kind of really learned the way people value stocks, you know, on future cash flows. And I just, that made no sense to me. I realized I didn't know what my salary would be in 2 years. So why would I possibly know what a company's income would be in 2 years? I thought that was crazy. So I kind of quickly moved on from that to try and, instead of looking at these very small gears, I wanted to see the big gears that moved everything. And then whenever I started to do some reading and read about the way macro traders traded based off of, you know, central bank policy, things like that, that's when that really clicked for me. That made total sense because I realized what happened in 08 was, you know, more of a macro event. It didn't matter if you were a really smart value investor or a really smart momentum investor or whatever the case may be. In 08, if you didn't get macro right, then you lost half your money. So it just kind of naturally fit for me. And it's such a fun and exciting, you know, everyday puzzle to try and figure out that you're never actually going to figure out with macro, that it's always fun to try and figure out what is the big gear that's moving everything. And, you know, for me, I'm only 35 and I've only been investing for a decade now. So sadly, central bank policy has kind of been the keystone that you have to pay attention to the entire time I've been investing, which, you know, for the old timers, that's kind of a new thing that's really annoying they have to deal with. But for me, it's all I've ever known.
What I love about your story, and I said this a million times on this podcast, is that you found the type of strategy that fit your personality. It resonated with you. And I think that's so important because, as you know now from doing this for a decade, and I've been doing it quite a long time myself, you have to passion this. You have to wake up every day, like you said, you want to go out there and figure out this puzzle, and you have to find a strategy that fits your personality. What I'm curious about is how you learned how to develop a strategy. How did you learn how to trade?
So the best way to describe that is just made a bunch of mistakes. You know, as soon as I learned about technical analysis and charting, that also really stuck with me. It made perfect sense to me. The same thing that's voodoo to other people, to me, instantly made sense. And I went down that path, and I've made a lot of mistakes and learned my own style there. You know, I was the same guy that a lot of guys are early on, where I had 100 things on my chart and I was pretty sure I knew how they all worked, and I'd figure out the ways to make trades. And over the years, I think the most important thing for me was not to add new things, but just steadily remove and remove and remove things from my process, whether it be the technical part or the macro part. So it's a constant process of editing things out, and over the time, finally, you know, I started to do well. But I made every psychological mistake you can make, I think, in trading. I made every you know, risk management error you can make. So for me, it was sort of the school of hard knocks. I made a lot of mistakes, learned from them, and tried my best to learn from other people. I read, you know, a lot of books, some good, some bad, learned from all of them, and just kind of kept refining my own process and learning from my mistakes and the mistakes of others. And plus also, you know, modeling the success of other people. It's kind of crazy to try to learn everything on your own without learning from people that have already done what you're doing or are doing what you're doing and are really good at it. So I tried really hard to do that. Met smart people that I, you know, kind of had as mentors that helped me along the way as well. So just the combination of mistakes and learning from the success of others.
How long did it take for you to become profitable?
Probably 6 years. And even after the sixth year, you know, it was still pretty close to even and, you know, a bit of a struggle.
Were you working that entire time?
Yes. Working full time the whole time. So, a job I used to have, I had a couple weekdays off, so I would trade, you know, full time in those days. And I also kind of sort of went from being a intraday trader and slowly moved to a swing trader. And that was one of the biggest things that helped me, because it takes out a lot of the psychological problems for me. If I kind of back away, look at weekly charts, trade those on a more swing basis.
Let's dissect your process a little bit. You've talked about how you like to use technicals And because I know you, I know that you look at a lot of fundamentals. You've already mentioned a few things that you've been focused on with central banks and such. Take us through your process. Let's start off with how a trade would set up. Is it fundamentals first? Is it technicals? How does that work?
For me, it's kind of a blend. And I think a lot of macro traders, they trade macro period, that, you know, they're not big chart guys. For me, I kind of start with the chart. I get ideas from charts. I try to have like a mental models running in my head at all times about what I think is true. And then if I see divergences from what I think is true, my kind of base case on a given trade, then whether it be technical or fundamental or both, then that kind of like will alert me that I need to pay attention to something. So like macro for me is sort of an overlay. So if I see something great on a chart, but it doesn't match at all with what I think makes sense on a macro basis, I either won't take the trade or I'll keep it very small. And on the flip side, if all my macro research has told me that something is true and then the chart confirms that, and, you know, we get a break or something, that's when I really take a big trade or give myself more risk room on the trade or something like that. So it's sort of a blend of both. And the way I think of it is macro is an overlay for me as more of a technical trader than a lot of other fundamental types.
Let's go over a recent trade that you did. Take us through how the trade set up and then how you executed it.
Sure. So I'm short Turkey via, well, both at the moment the currency, but the more slow moving trade would be their ETF for Turkey. And it was a trade that on a technical basis did something that I love, where it kind of clearly had a horizontal line you could draw where it was just kind of hitting at support over and over and over. I love to see a horizontal line that's been support or resistance or both get tested repeatedly, because it just kind of, you're just building up that energy for a big move. So I saw that happening on the Turkey ETF, and it kind of fit for me from a macro perspective, because I was bearish Turkey, watching them, you know, blow through all of their FX reserves. They started recently, you know, doing swaps with their own banks in order for them to go get dollars from their own banks to kind of make their FX reserves look better. Which is just a giant red flag to me. They have really high inflation, and a lot of that inflation is food inflation, which carries a lot of political risk. So the way I saw Turkey was they're running out of room to help their economy, because they can't really ease, because that would hurt the currency. But they're also, you know, running out of room to tighten, because if they tighten too much, then that would have political consequences. So this made a lot of sense to me, that here we are on a technical precipice, and we have, you know, a government that can't really do much about it, a central bank that can't really do much about it. So for me, it's a great setup. So I just kind of looked at that line and decided whenever that broke, then we were probably going to see a real break lower, and got short pretty much as soon as it broke, and it's still on its way down. And I think it, you know, it has a good bit of room left. The currency had a very clear area where if it got past that area, then you could look at a big move. And we got past that this morning, in fact. So the big move could come in the currency, which always hurts their stock market, of course. So that's kind of an example of blending those technicals and the macro fundamentals into a trade.
The stars aligned, right?
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
The stars aligned for you. You had your technical homework aligned with your fundamental homework. I want to dissect this trade a little bit more, and I want to talk about specifically the technical analysis tools you were using.
Sure. So I keep it very simple on a technical basis. When a lot of other traders see my charts, you know, I think it kind of freaks them out with how little I have, but I kind of blend a lot of different disciplines. So, you know, a lot of classical charting, but also do things my own way. One of the big things I do is I pay almost no attention to candle wicks. Anything I draw will be only on the candle body, and I keep lines around for a long time, even after they've been, you know, violated, by candles or whatever, cause they just tend to keep working. And I love lines horizontally that have been both, resistance and support, and then maybe have gone back to resistance, that I find those powerful. And that was exactly what we had with Turkey. That just, the biggest thing I was trading was we had a breakdown of a trend line, kind of a diagonal trend line, and then it went back up and retested it and failed, which is, you know, always a good sign. And then it kind of floated around on its vertical support, or excuse me, horizontal support, for about a month and a half. And I just kind of sat back and waited for that to go. And it did. And it even kind of retested a little bit. And to me, that was just a great signal. And we're down, I don't know, about 7% or something like that since then.
It sounds to me as though your technical strategy, it's pretty discretionary. You're drawing a trend line, you're drawing a horizontal line, and then you're sitting back looking at it and seeing if that, how they react to those areas, and if it fits in with your fundamentals. Am I right in that?
Yes. I'm about as discretionary as you could be as a trader. Nothing I do is, you know, systematic. I don't model anything. Everything I do is discretionary and kind of based on feel for the fundamentals and the technicals both. So absolutely. And my favorite thing technically is always a horizontal line versus, you know, a lot of people like the big vertical trend lines, and I use them, but whenever you get a breakdown of or breakout on a horizontal line that's really mattered, that to me that's really important.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I was going to ask you, is if you have a go-to technical indicator or just a go-to process that you do when you're looking at trend lines or horizontal lines. And to me, it sounds like you like support and resistance.
I do, and I have ways of I built a process to kind of build out supply and demand, like zones, areas based on technical analysis. That's a little bit different from what other people do, and it's difficult to explain sometimes. But there's just like a certain candle structure you can find where there's just a lot of pent up energy that exploded, and so often you have unfilled orders from institutions at those levels that those levels still matter. So I'll draw out zones for kind of supply and demand, and I'll use those to counter trend trade or as targets, things like that. Whenever we get to those levels, that I know I need to lighten up, go the other way, or just get out of the way, whatever the case may be.
A question I have for you, because you understand the fundamentals so well, and we're going to stay in this Turkey trade for now. Since you were looking at Turkey fundamentally in a bearish mindset, because that's what the fundamentals were telling you, right? You were okay. When you went to the charts, do you feel that because you're discretionary, that maybe you were looking things for technical setups to prove that your bearish, you know, thoughts on the fundamentals were right? Or do you just completely block that and go in and just do your thing on the charts? You see what I'm saying? Because I feel like traders, a lot of times, once I have an idea of where I think the market could go, you know, fundamentally, you know, because like I'm not a fundamental trader, but a lot of times I'll be reading things and I'll be going, oh man, this could be bearish or this could be bullish. And I'll go to the chart and I look for reasons to support it. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, what are you doing, man? You should be looking for things that don't support it to keep your ass out of trouble in case you're wrong. So I'm just curious the way you approach it.
Yeah, no, it's a great question, and especially on the fundamental side, I try really hard to red team my own ideas. As far as charts go, like I have no doubt that there are times where I am confirming my own bias, even if I don't realize it. But I think that one of the good things for me keeping my charts very simple is it helps me avoid that. I wrote a big monthly research piece. It was like 40 something pages about China, and it was a very bearish kind of longer term view of China. And then I always put a bunch of charts, even in that my monthly piece. And I pull up a bunch of China charts. This is about 3 months ago and 4 months ago, actually. And all the charts look great. And so here I am. I write this very bearish piece, and on the charts, I'm like, by the way, the charts look pretty good. Maybe you could buy this. So I try really hard to have that honesty when it comes to not seeing exactly what I want to see. And that's kind of why I use macro as an overlay. There are times where I want to take a trade in a certain direction, then I go look at the chart and it's telling me the opposite. But that's beautiful, because then I can go back and say, hey, why am I wrong? Like, if I am wrong, why? What am I not seeing? What's important that I don't think is important in this story that's trying to tell me something I'm not seeing? So that's a kind of a beautiful natural feedback in the process, is if I'm wrong on the chart, then I'm probably wrong in the fundamentals, or vice versa. So I try really hard to have that honesty when I'm looking at these things. But like I say, I have no doubt that there are times where, you know, I'm just telling myself a story looking at a chart. As Peter Brandt would say, you know, you show a chart to five traders, you get 10 opinions. So.
Yeah. I love that you're having the charts prove to you if your fundamental analysis is correct, because you see so many macro people out there that just stick to what they say they see in the macro picture, but they don't let price prove them anything. And
yeah, exactly.
If you're trading your own money, you know that you need to be, if you're going to manage your risk and you're going to go out and execute your trade, well, price better agree with you, because otherwise you're going to have a very short-lived time in this business. Let's continue to talk about execution. How do you work your way into a position? You mentioned the turkey trade. Let's stay there. You said that some things were lined up on the charts. You had a fundamental opinion, and all of a sudden you're ready to go. Are you just hitting bids? Are you in all at once? And also tell us how you determine where you're wrong on a trade.
Sure. So I always use technicals, first of all, for where I'm wrong. And I try to match up, you know, my risk area with where I think I can go as far as a target. I normally try not to actually set hard targets. I think it's a great idea, but after you have a couple of trades, go flying through a target and leaving a bunch of money on the table, I try to stay away from that. But I always have a stop. I know it's kind of another area where a lot of fundamental traders won't, you know, because they're so sure they're right. But I'm never sure I'm right, so I always use the chart. Sometimes the chart will give you a very tight risk range, and it's really nice. You can size the position up. Sometimes you have to give it some breathing room. And the turkey chart, you know, the way I looked at it, it actually needed a good bit of wiggle room for the stop. So it wasn't a really big time risk reward trade. So I had to keep it pretty small. And I kind of blend. Sometimes I trade around a core position if it's a big, big idea I have. So I've been short the Australian dollar for months. And that's one where I have a lot of confidence. So I trade around a smaller core position. I add to, subtract from it, kind of all along based on the technicals, keeping a core position on sort of no matter what, with a, that has, you know, its own stop, but it's really, really wide. And as far as like a normal trade, there's times where I just go all in at once. The turkey, that one was, I put the whole position on at once, but there are other times where I'll go half-half, or maybe I'll put a third of it on. And one thing I like to do with that is put a third on, and then if I get a retest of the level that I felt comfortable with, the breakout or breakdown, I'll add on that retest if it proves to hold, maybe that next half or third. And the other thing I like to do that took me a long time to learn is add to winners. When I started realizing a lot of the great traders out there added to winners, they didn't add to losers, it made a lot of sense for me, because I think early on as a new trader, you always want to add to your losers because, you know, you're sure you're right. So, hey, it's cheaper now. But in the reality, you probably are wrong and you should be adding to winners, not losers. And it took me a while, but I slowly started to do that.
What about exits? How are you working your way out of trades?
So this is my biggest weakness as a trader. It's really hard for me not to ring the register too early on a winning trade, especially with moving my stops. I am in love with moving my stops to break even or into a little bit of profit too early. So it's just been a constant struggle for me to slow myself down, to keep stops where they are, and wait until, you know, the move has gotten pretty mature before I move a stop. So that's something I'm honestly still working on and trying to get better at. But I tend to wait until the trade proves me right for a little bit, and then I'll move a stop to break even or even into a little bit of profit. And I try to just trail the stop after that. Wait for the technicals to tell me I can move the stop, you know, a little cluster, then another big move, and then move it below that cluster, and just kind of keep doing that. That's the ideal way of doing it. And like I said earlier, I'll draw out you know, supply and demand zones. And if those are strong enough, I'll use those as exits, and I really will, you know, honor those because it tends to work more than it doesn't.
Once again, like you said earlier, a lot of discretion. And it sounds to me that a lot of times you're using trailed stops to get you out, or if you see a area that you think is a very important support or a very important resistance and the market goes there, you potentially are getting out of a portion of your position or all of it. Are you watching for the level to get tested first, or are you just working hard exits at those areas?
So it would depend. If it's something I know I'm going to be at the screens and I can sit there and watch, then I will let it test and see what happens. And if not, then I'll just tighten my stop up or even, you know, have the target to get me out. If it's something I have a little less, something I think it's a good trade, but it's not, you know, some major big macro trade for me. It's just one where I'm just, you know, trying to pay the bills. Then, you know, I'll move the stop up or have the target and just get out. And if it's one where I have a lot of confidence and it's going to be a big trade for me that I think could be a difference maker, then I'll kind of babysit it and let it prove it to me before I prove it to it.
A couple of trades I want to talk about. First, the U.S. dollar trade that you've been writing and talking about. Talk to us about that.
Sure. So I've been a dollar bull for, I don't know, like 2 or 3 years now, probably, which has largely worked out. This is an example where there's been times where the chart looked bad. The chart looked good for, you know, other pairs against the dollar, and I just didn't touch them because it just didn't match my personal macro view. So I've only traded the dollar in a long fashion here for the last couple of years. I've just been such a bull fundamentally, so I just use the chart to let me know when it's a good time to get long, and I go with it that way. And, you know, we had the big breakout a couple of weeks ago and a retest last week, and today, you know, we're just kind of sitting right at the breakout level still.
So why I wanted to talk about the U.S. dollar trade is because you've been a bull for so long. My question is, as a macro trader, that theme you said has been consistent for you. It's been bullish. So are you holding positions the entire time, or are you just trading in and out of it?
I've had positions the entire time, but it would go down to like just whenever the chart would look bad, you know, then I'm going down to just that small core position on, say, the Australian dollar. You know, I have a few pairs that I like, and then I have a few pairs that I love. And those pairs that I love, I've kept positions on kind of throughout, just really small whenever the charts weren't looking good for me. And then I plus them back up whenever we start getting what I need to see. Australian dollar's been my favorite. The Swiss franc's been a favorite of mine against the dollar. So I just kind of trade around a core position in those especially. And whenever the chart tells me I can add, I add.
Gotcha. So until a fundamental view that you have changes, you continually trade that direction as long as the charts are supporting it. So something like that, that's why I wanted to talk about this U.S. dollar trade, because it could go on for years.
Yeah, well, hopefully it does.
Yeah, but, of course.
But if it doesn't, you know, if the chart breaks down, then I'll know, like, okay, something's wrong with my macro view of this, and I need to go figure that out. And, you know, if the Fed starts adding a lot of dollar liquidity, then we, you know, might be the end of the dollar bull market. And at that time, you know, if the chart breaks down and it's because the Fed's printing money and the rest of the world's doing okay, then it'd be an area where I would get out and flip my view and flip my trades.
Let's talk about U.S. equities, because you do talk a lot about them as well. I know recently you talked about a Dow short that you got in. Talk to us about why you decided to get in that trade, how you executed it, and if you're still in it.
Yeah, so I am still in it, and it kind of bothered me overnight. It was great because the China trade news came out that, you know, where President Trump said he was going to throw all the tariffs back on, and kind of the trade war was taking an ugly turn. His futures collapse, which was, you know, good for me, but I always hate whenever news is the reason for a move in my favor, because it just so often gets faded. But what actually brought me here is I kind of have a dashboard for stocks that I watch. It's similar, I think, to what what most people watch. I keep an eye on credit spreads, cyclicals versus defensives, keep an eye on the VIX, things like that that are kind of running alongside of equities that you can watch for divergences. And cyclicals have been struggling the last few weeks against defensives. Spreads kind of stopped getting tighter at least, and the VIX was testing a breakout a couple weeks for the last few weeks, and I was like, okay, like, and we're in this like really tight rising wedge in stocks that have gone, you know, straight up since Christmas. So it, and we were kind of about to test the all-time highs again. And for me, on a monthly chart, actually, I drew, you know, a nice horizontal line at the top, and it was about to be the third test of that line. So it was just kind of a confluence of technicals and fundamentals. The fact that, I, to me, from what I can gather from looking at sentiment indicators that are out there, as well as, you know, my own Twitter feed and friends, that there's a lot of bullishness out there and we're kind of overbought. So I was like, well, there's a lot of different things that are kind of adding up to a decent risk reward trade here. So I put on the short trade, hoping to make 10%, risking about 3% from all-time highs. And, you know, so far it's worked out mostly because of the China news. But like I say, I wish the move happened on its own. Friday, we had such a good close that I was pretty sure I would end up getting stopped out. But the news last night kind of helped this thing along, and I'm still in it, but we'll see what happens.
This is one where I have a question for you about the technicals, because when you look at a chart of the Dow, it's hard to find something that would, you know, would be bearish to coincide with your fundamentals. What did you see in the charts that made you, that confirmed your fundamental bearish analysis?
Sure. There are, on some shorter terms, as well as longer term, you could actually, for classical charters out there, kind of see a head and shoulders that was forming. The rising wedge was so tight and so vertical that I thought, you know, if we get below this kind of rising wedge, then we could have a nice little pullback. And just the fact that you just drew a straight line across and you're going to get the third test of it, that told me like there's a decent chance of a failure at this line because it's worked two other times. So I had the combination of my favorite thing, which is those horizontal lines, as well as, you know, a breakdown in the wedge that was a possibility. And then all those fundamentals that I mentioned kind of backing that up.
We talked a lot about your strategy, your process today. What is it about your strategy that you believe gives you an edge and separates you from other traders?
Yeah, so this is something I actually wrote about. It's been a while, but I have sort of a unique view on edge. I think the common wisdom in trading is if you don't have an identifiable edge, you know, you just won't make it. And I think if you're a really systematic trader, that's definitely true. You need to have something you can identify. But to me, as a macro trader, I kind of view it very differently. And early on for me, I heard traders talking about edge, and I noticed, you know, every investor I've ever met in the world claims they have an edge. And I'm not really good at math, but I know that's impossible. For me, I'm not comfortable identifying anything I do as an edge, at least not one I'm confident will last in the long term. Global macro is informed, you know, by a mental framework of the way the gears of the world are turning each other in a really complex system. Having an edge in macro is probably going to be fleeting. You know, I may understand parts of the system perfectly, but I might still be wrong about the system as a whole. I may be right about the system as a whole, but have a really flawed view of the components. It kind of lends to building like fleeting victories that'll boost your ego, especially if you're right for the wrong reasons. But if you get macro right for even a few years, you may start feeling like you have an edge and that you understand the way the system works, but you may not, you know, you may have been right for the wrong reasons. And because of all that, I'm not comfortable saying anything I have as an edge. To me, being a good trader is all about plasticity, you know, being able to change and adapt to your environment. And if I go out and say I have an edge, then in my opinion, I'm less likely to adapt to my environment. And as a macro trader, I think that's what I'm depending on. So I just think it's a fatal conceit, especially in macro, to outline an edge that you have, because to me it's going to end up biting you.
Well said, my friend. This was awesome, but we're not done yet. We have some rapid fire questions next if you're ready for those.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, everybody. Our rapid fire segment is sponsored by Trading Technologies. Access the global markets from virtually anywhere with TT. They are the world's fastest commercially available futures trading platform. And now you can trade cryptocurrency spot and derivative markets side by side. For more information, please visit tradingtechnologies.com. First question for you, Chase. What trader has influenced your life the most and why?
You know, since you said influenced my life, you know, not necessarily my trading, definitely Brent Johnson of Santiago Capital. I don't know if you've seen him on Twitter or out on Real Vision or not, but he's been a friend and mentor for me in the business for a few years now, and I've just really benefited from his kind of wisdom and kindness, and he's helped me a lot. I, you know, not coming from Wall Street or business school, no formal training, having a mentor was important for me, and he's really done a lot for me. I don't know Peter Brandt, but as a technician, I've kind of latched myself onto him and really learned a lot of classical charting from him. So I would definitely count him as well as sort of on the technical side.
What was one of the hardest things for you to overcome in trading?
Well, that's definitely really easy. I blew up an account about 5 years ago, lost my entire liquid net worth and some borrowed money. Super painful. But it branded all the most important training lessons right into my brain because of it. So it was sort of a blessing, but it was definitely the hardest things I've ever had to overcome.
How has your trading process evolved over the years?
Time horizon has really shifted longer term. I went from focusing on intraday and then kind of pushed that to swing trading with smaller size and wider stops. Fits my personality a lot better. So all those psychological pitfalls I mentioned before, they just magnify the shorter term I trade. So moving that time horizon has been the biggest evolution.
What is one attribute that you believe every trader should have?
Definitely humility. You have to be comfortable, and I mean truly comfortable, losing often to be a good trader. And you have to learn from every loss. If your ideas are not weakly held, you eventually fall on a sword that humility probably would have helped you avoid.
Favorite book about trading?
The Tao of Capital by Mark Spitznagel. The name of my business actually comes from chapter 2 of that book, which the chapter title is The Forest and the Pine Cone, and it's the best chapter of any book I've ever read.
Favorite movie about trading?
The Big Short, for sure.
What's the best piece of advice that you've received about trading?
Your ego is not your amigo, and make sure your idea horizon matches your trade horizon. That was one that took me too long and too many mistakes to kind of figure out, that I may have a great idea, but if I'm day trading it, and it's a 8 month idea or something, that doesn't make any sense.
If you could go back in time and give the younger you a piece of advice, what would it be?
Trade the markets as they are, never as you want them to be. There's no room for ideology in trading, and there's no justice in markets, only price.
If you had an elevator pitch me your edge in trading, what would you say?
Yeah, you already know that one. So I don't think I have an edge. And if anything, my edge is that I don't hold on to the belief that I have one.
Last question for today, Chase. What's your favorite thing to do when you're not trading?
I'm a big football and baseball fan, so love watching sports, and also really love to be in nature, whether camping or hiking or being out on the boat. I feel a sense of calm when I'm out in the forest or on water. I just can't find anywhere else. The Germans use the word Waldeinsamkeit, which kind of means peaceful solitude in the woods. And I've always really liked that word, and kind of sums up the way I feel when I get out in nature.
I love that. And we didn't touch actually on what you're doing away from the screens today. And I've been putting a major effort lately on Twitter and in my shows to talk about traders doing things beyond the charts, getting away from the screen. So I really loved that answer. Do you find that is really part of your strategy, that you have to be away from the screens?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something that I didn't do enough of early on. You know, I was just so addicted to markets and just loved it so much that I'd spent way too much time, especially when I was intraday trading, you know, just too plugged in, and you have to get away. It gives you a lot of clarity, and some of my best ideas come from when I'm away. You know, maybe I'm still thinking about the markets, but I'm at least unplugged and I'm away from it all.
Yeah, very, very well said and very important. Chase, where can people find you on Twitter, and give us a website to check out?
Sure. On Twitter is just @PineconeMacro, and the website is pineconemacro.com.
Chase, this was awesome. Thank you so much for coming on Futures Radio Show.
Appreciate it. Thanks a lot, Anthony.
Thank you for listening to Futures Radio Show. If you have any questions or comments for myself or my guests, please visit futuresradioshow.com and sign up to be a premium member for free. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes.